Earlier this week, we asked VOCM listeners if the School for the Deaf should be reopened. We received more than 7,000 responses. 93% of those were in favor of reopening the school. Most parents and educators agree that the current system isn't working, and many deaf and hard of hearing children are missing out on a proper education. Is the solution to reopen the school for the deaf or provide proper supports in the regular classroom? John Reed was an administrator with the School for the Deaf. He joins me live in studio this morning. Good morning, John.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Very well. Thanks for making time for us.
Sure, my pleasure.
When the school closed in 2010, it was a school that was built to accommodate 150 students, and it was a decrease in enrollment and an opportunity for savings. If you reopen the doors today, are there enough children that are in need of that type of specialized education to have the School for the Deaf open?
I would think so. I did a thing up for the review of the the legislation review for inclusion, and I used the statistics that they had about 3 years ago, where they were doing 280, they were giving services to 280 deaf and hard of hearing kids. So I figured, well, okay, let's just say 30% of those need to be in a school for the deaf. Well, that's 96. That would justify opening the school for the deaf. The last time there was some a study done onto the cost of educating the students at the school, I have the statistics from 2000 to 2004. In 2000, there were 74 students, and it cost approximately $50,217 per student to educate these students. Right now, through the human rights filing that the Churchills did, they have a teacher of the deaf for their son, who's getting paid around $90,000 to $100,000 a year. So if you did that for the other five students who are just in this area, that's $540,000 per student. That's not right.
So the cost savings were maybe a snapshot in time versus a long-term vision of what the overall cost and the quality of education.
Exactly. The quality of education definitely subsided.
The mandate at the school wasn't just about the teacher or just about the government, it was about the individual. Can you replicate the type of services and the quality of education in this inclusive or integrated school model now? Is that possible in your opinion?
No, not in the model now. Like I said many times before, the concept of inclusion is not new. The first time it was tried was actually back in 1834, I think it was, in Germany. And it was tried with a school for the deaf there. And it was fairly successful, but it was inclusion in a reverse way, where they had hearing students in with the deaf students. That worked out for a while, but it couldn't continue because of a number of factors. One, the kids grow up. Two, they start getting jobs. Three, there aren't enough people in the area to keep bringing them in. And that's one of the things that was brought up also, and that's the concept of having classes of deaf students in the regular classroom system, where you maybe have, in an area such as, say, Glovertown. You could have five or six of the deaf students go into a school in Glovertown and set up a class there with a teacher. That sounds like it might be feasible, except when you start thinking about the age limit. You might have a kid who is seven, who is in second grade, and you might have a child who is a teenager who's 15 and is starting level two or level three in high school. How do you have one teacher teach that range, the curriculum, in that? It's impossible. It can't be done. And that was also tried before. In Amherst, Nova Scotia, when the Interprovincial School for the Deaf was open, they had what they called out classes. I did 2 weeks of student teaching there in 1974 in Truro in an out class. And there was one teacher there. She did not have a teaching assistant. And she had one student who was six, and she had three students who were in the 10 to 11 range, And she had two students who were teenagers in high school. And the reason for this, they figured, was get them integrated. They will socialize with the hearing peers and the school and all that. But the only socialization they got was during lunch hour, recess, or phys ed. Well, you can do that at a school for the deaf as well. I have reverse, especially now, where you have the Waterford Valley High School mm-hmm. right next to the school for the deaf. That could be all kinds of interaction, interplay. One of the things I like to do is, when the school was open, you had Barbara Day call in the other day. Mm-hmm. And Barbara and I were colleagues for a number of years. And one of the things we used to do at a school was we would have workshops, and we would bring in different experts to help us improve our ability to teach the kids. And we brought in some speech and language teachers from the Montreal Oral School for the Deaf. Well, they came in, they were with us for about 5 days before they actually did their workshop. And they looked at the students, they talked to the students, and they interacted with the students before the students went home to their parents. And they were so impressed that they asked us to go to their school and present our philosophy of education. So Barbara and I did. And one of the things, well, we set this up, the philosophy of educating students at the School for the Deaf. And here's what we say. There is no one method of instruction or communication that is applicable to all students. There is no one placement or setting that is applicable to all students. American Sign Language is a living and evolving language. All children can benefit from auditory training. Sign language does not preclude or hinder the acquisition of speech. Speech is an important communication skill, but does not define educational success or personal worth.
We assume, and that's what we're talking about, is the potential success stories of the past that maybe won't be retold in years to come because of the absence of a specialized school for the deaf.
Exactly. I mean, when you invited me to come on and speak this morning, I put on my Facebook page that, you know, I'm going to be on with Patty Daly and talk about reopening the school and everything. And I said I wanted to talk about some success stories. And I knew of about five right off the head, off the top of my head, including Chad Grenham, who got a lot of press recently. One of the first two graduates of the School for the Deaf who went to Gallaudet University to get a graduate degree, they graduated in 1968. Judy Shea was the only deaf teacher of the deaf here in Newfoundland. So she was a role model, a big role model. Miles Murphy did not graduate from Gallaudet, but he came back here and started working. He's now the executive director of Newfoundland Labrador Association of the Deaf. This is, almost 60 years ago now, right? Anyway, I put that out, and I was thinking of a couple of students who were working in the government. I was thinking of Kathy Bennett, who I had a letter to the editor about, who is the first deaf principal of School for the Deaf in Burnaby, British Columbia. And then I said, does anybody know of anybody else? And I got something like, it was 63, and it went up to about 80. All kinds of personal stories. One of the students who graduated from our school was a guy named Chris, what's his last name? Sometimes I get, Sutton. Okay, Chris Sutton. He came to school late. He was a hard of hearing kid, but he was not making it in his regular school near his home. He came to our school and he blossomed. Now he is the national director of the Canadian Hard of Hearing Association, their national director. I told you about Kathy Bennett. We have another girl from Grey River, Kathy Lushman. She was a principal of, assistant principal of the Governor Baxter School for the Deaf in Maine. And now she is, I think, coordinator of the preschool program. And that's another thing that we had at their School for the Deaf. We talk about having early childhood education. Well, we have what was called the Home Parent Program. That lady who was on, who has a two-year-old child from Labrador, our teacher, qualified master teacher of the deaf, master degree teacher of the deaf, would have gone to visit her and speak with her, and we'd set up VCR with tapes that showed her how to work with her child, how to label her house so that the child would see that this is a refrigerator, and this is a chair, and this is a table, way before the child goes to school.
And that level and intensity of support and service is not there. So right. these success stories, these should not be standalones and a thing of the past. It's what we have to replicate so that all of the students now, the 326 that are on a variety, whether it be moderate hearing loss all the way to profoundly deaf or deaf. John, we really appreciate your expertise and your passion this morning. Thank you very much.
Too bad it's so short.
Well, and it's the nature of the beast.
I could get on a soapbox and go forever.
Well, and you know what? That's really been important to the family, the Churchill family and others. We do appreciate your time this morning. Thank you, John.
No, thank you for having me.
John Reed was an administrator at the School for the Deaf.